Welcome aboard our vessel. I'll be your cook. Join me and my trusty ally, the captain, as we set sail through our relationship with music, film, literature, and everything in between, as well as our ongoing exploration into mental health and well-being. Anchors up!
Oh, I thought it was like Vic Greaves doing his guest the song. And then he used to do the nightclub mode, didn't he? He'd go faster. Shooting Star special today, guys. If you don't know what it is.
No, I'm not getting you started on Bob Mortimer.
Where were you in the 90s? Like, if you don't know what that is. If you don't know, you need to YouTube fast. But hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good. You?
Back in the green room?
We are back in the green room. I know we keep going different locations at the moment.
It's quite
Where did we record the last one? I can't remember.
What was the last one? Oh, Biggie and Tupac.
Your house,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my house, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Mixing it right up.
We are.
Luckily, Eve didn't have a cat fight when we were doing the other day.
Yeah.
Another cat basically came in and stood right outside the French doors, and Eve was just jabbing the window.
Yeah. Jesus.
Oh, bless her. But yeah, how's your week been?
Yeah, good. Legs a lot better now.
Yes.
So I'm some shockwave therapy, so I'm electric at the moment. Mm-hmm. Two treatments. Yeah, one more to go. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting a little trip to Edinburgh.
Yes, you
have.
You'll
see Big Thief. Yeah. So that'll be quite a nice little treat for us. Yeah, you?
Charlotte's not been to Edinburgh, has she?
No.
Oh, you've been, though.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
I like Edinburgh a lot. Yeah, good. Well, 2 weeks really got to reflect on, haven't we? But yeah, just with work, a lot of driving around. I had a fantastic meeting in Bournemouth this week. It's a breakup of a team, like an end of an era, really. And we spent most of the time just reminiscing, so everyone had the opportunity to share their highlights and stuff. And we were in a circle. It was like a proper therapy, like you said, it sounds like a therapy session, which, to be fair, it was a cathartic experience. But I've just reflected the best group of leaders I've ever worked with. And that's
nice.
No, and everyone who went around said it. And I think you can tell that from the environment. If you're comfortable to go that deep, cry without worrying about what people think, and everyone getting it, and just even afterwards going for food, having a couple of drinks together, and really marking that time. And around the table, people just throwing stories about how they knew each other and how they got to know each other, etc. So really good. Yeah, so reflecting on challenges, just talk about your leg, and you know you've been struggling to work out and things. That's why I asked you to reflect on what it means to you, but also thinking about your body longer term. How did you do that?
I think it's actually went for a short walk to do it. I'm very aware it's my coping mechanism, especially after a tricky day at work or to get ready for work, and it levels me out.
Yeah.
Just doing some form of exercise, which is where I thought actually I need to go to the physio, because I was starting getting a bit agitated with things that I don't normally get annoyed with. So that, I guess that's one bit. But then, like you said, looking after the body, it is that. Actually, there was one time in the gym I tried to do an exercise. I was like, oh, it hurts. So I was like, so I should stop.
Yeah.
Whereas previously, I would have kept going.
Yeah. To prove it. Like,
to prove I could still do it. But it's like noticing, actually, you know, like you said, we're not getting younger. There are aches and pains that are around. And it's, I think tuning back in, listening to my body a bit.
Good.
I seem to have lost doing that. And I set you a challenge of different genres whilst you get a pump on.
And workout. I wanted a 90s pop. I started writing. The first one that came up was by, remember Smash Hits? So it was 90s Smash Hits, and I just press play, hit shuffle, but I'll just tell you some of the tunes that were in there. Return of the Mac, Mark Morrison, Pure Shores, All Saints, good track. Share Believe, no, you'll appreciate that one. Praise You, Fatboy Slim, you know, Simply Red in their Stars. Loads of The Cause. Remember them when they came around? The Cause one was So Young.
Okay.
Sixpence None the Richer, Kiss Me. Yeah. And you know what? So Sixpence None the Richer came on, Kiss Me, and it made me think of my Bambi Bird, still alive, Dontre Thomas. He's going, everywhere I bloody go on the radio lately, all I hear is that song called Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, and I'm moaning about it, basically. So that's where it made me go. But you know, I enjoyed it. I put rap or house music on drum and bass, are very like one dimensional almost. But I had a bit of a laugh with it as well, yeah. A bit of reminiscence. That was good.
That's what I like, is like looking in the gym and just imagining. I know there's a guy who does it on Instagram, but like just imagining they're listening to different stuff. So you get like a big bodybuilder, but imagine that he's listening to, I don't know, the Smurfs or something.
Yeah.
You know, and it just makes you chuckle. So
love it.
Okay, so we got a biggie.
Yes.
some could say the king. And it's over to me. So I'm going to do a quick intro.
You are.
So we'll see how well this flows. See how succinct I can be. So this person was born to Vernon and Gladys in a two-room house in Tupelo, Mississippi, January 8th, 1935. Unfortunately, his twin brother, Jesse Garron, was stillborn, which led this person to grow up as an only child. Him and his parents moved to Memphis in 48, and then this person graduated from Humes High School in 1953. So he was influenced quite a lot by pop and country music at the time, gospel music from church, the all-night gospel sings he frequently attended, and the black R&B he absorbed on historic Beale Street as a Memphis teenager. And in 1954, he began his singing career with the legendary Sun Records label, who I'm sure we've mentioned before.
Yes.
In 55, his recording contract was sold to RCA Victor. And then by 56, he was an international sensation. So within 2 years, he's basically gone from a newbie to literally, well, known worldwide. Sound a style that uniquely combined his diverse musical influences and blurred and challenged the social and racial barriers of the time. This person ushered in a whole new era of American music and popular culture. Driven on by talent, good looks, sensuality, charisma, and good humor, endeared him to millions, as did his humility and human kindness that he demonstrated throughout his life, including employing a lot of his family members to different roles.
And his friends as well, close friends, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's known all over the world by his first name, as he's regarded as one of the most important figures of the 20th century popular culture. And he passed at his Memphis home on August the 16th, 1977, aged 42. So I guess it's time to invite on board the one and only...
Elvis.
Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley. Yeah, I think... God, again, we've got... It's a bit like Paul McCartney,
isn't it? Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like trying to... I think... Let's go to the start, isn't it? Mm. So, you know, I think... Probably one of the lesser known facts about him was the twin that he had, who died about 30 minutes before him, a twin brother. And that starts, like, which obviously he wouldn't have even learned about, like, you know, later on, because obviously he wouldn't realize what's going on at the time. But I suppose like, I've been thinking about it. I was going to ask you the impact for him lifelong.
Yeah.
And I wonder what you think about that. Like, how can people cope with this? People cope with it differently, but just. That would have had a lasting impact on him, and when he found it off his parents, you think, why me? The survivor stuff, doesn't it, and things like that.
It's all like, survivor's guilt, you know, and I guess, essentially, even there'll be a shadow, literally there, you know, of his twin, and potentially more pressure to be successful.
Yeah.
But then also, I guess, it influenced him keeping family close, looking after family, really understanding the importance you know, of where he's come from.
Definitely.
Because again, interest sort of touching on family, there was a lot of relations who died at similar age to Elvis, so mid-40s to 50s. And again, you know, his mum had the same health downfall as he did over the 4 years. But something that I picked up, and we'll, you know, we'll talk about a lot of different things. I've put a biography in, a YouTube one, it's like an hour long. I recommend, you don't have to watch it, but listen to it, and it just talks through everything quite succinctly. But interestingly, his mum's parents were first cousins.
Okay.
And I, you know, I haven't got essential facts and stuff, but I know that it can cause health implications.
Okay.
You know, with relations and with the blood and things like that. So it almost... kind of explains a bit why there was such a family hereditary going on. Yeah,
and that was quite like normal, wasn't it, at the time? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we got to put it into context the time of what was going on. I did read that she grew, Elvis's mum grew really close to him in the years obviously subsequent, and also I suppose was like treating him as the gift, you know, mm-hmm. that had come through. But apparently they were so close. She died in 1958, so by this point he'd obviously not long got into being famous, yeah. you know, started to get known. But it was reported that a lot of the guests at the funeral were really uncomfortable just by the amount of sorrow Elvis was releasing.
Okay. Yeah.
I've only ever witnessed something like this once. A good friend of mine, I won't give him away, but their dad died tragically. It was horrible. My best friend growing up. And I remember at that funeral, he was my tough mate. He was the tough guy, boxer, you know, all of that. And I remember when he came around and he was uncontrollable because his dad was his hero. And that was, like, I, at that age, I was younger, didn't know what to do. You know, like, I was sat a few rows back with my mum. But I think that just shows the bond that they had, that he lost that sort of control. But obviously, the other thing that we, I don't know, it seems like a link to this, you just said health, but he had a difficult relationship with drugs, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah.
So that was another thing that we both pointed out, that he was massively against what's known as illegal drugs. Mm-hmm. But he took an absolute shed load, basically, didn't he, of prescription drugs. But he saw that as okay, I think, wasn't it? So, but Johnny Cash had that problem. It seemed to be an industry problem. When they got famous, they could get what they wanted, couldn't they? They would just get a doctor to write them a prescription. But I wonder if part of that was controlling internal battles as well. I don't know.
Yeah, and he suffered from insomnia from a very young age as well.
Okay.
Sleeping 4-5 hours. But yeah, he was very... with his how outspoken he was, it was Nixon who gave him a Bureau of Narcotics badge.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, just to sort of, so it showed the issue. It says here, you know, when again, you know, that Elvis believed he could legally enter any country, both wearing guns and carrying any drugs he wished.
Okay.
But his view was. Almost getting drugs illegally or substances illegally was wrong. However, they're prescribed to you, it's okay.
Right.
So he had the addiction to prescription drugs.
Yeah. And it's complex because I think it's almost, you know, that taking them to the level that he was wrong, and probably acquiring them in questionable ways, you know, getting people to write you a prescription because of who you are. You know, it's not like me and you could have gone and got that, you know, they knew doctors, they had the cash.
Yeah.
And doctors, because they A, wanted the cash, you know, of people who've got at this point probably an endless supply, which is not how it ended for Elvis, but you know, it's almost like it's an asset. We talked about assets for Biggie and Tupac, there's doctors' assets, you know, they look after them. Do you know what I mean? If they need stuff. But I watched The Last 24 Hours, which is I'm not always a fan of it. But I watched the Elvis one because they really dramatise the death. But it does tell you a little bit about their life. And on this one, they had the Memphis Mafia, which were Elvis' best friends. They used to travel around with him. And he was saying, like, that one of them said they witnessed in a hotel, we'll come on to the colonel in a minute, Elvis' manager, saying that he'd heard that Elvis was wasted one afternoon, you know, not on this planet, but he had a show in the night. And he walked in and this doctor was trying to give him uppers, I suppose, to get him going. And the friend said, I've raised my concerns. And the colonel said, all that matters is that Elvis is on that stage tonight.
Yeah.
And that at that time, we've talked a bit about when we've done our Beatles specials. I'm sure we'll do like Rolling Stones in the future and stuff like that. These artists, a lot of time, they came from nothing. So they weren't business savvy. They were just talented people. So they let other people take control of those sides of them. But they basically used them, didn't they?
Yeah.
They used the talent.
When you were saying that, like, given up as or made sure they were on a certain level, it just reminds me of Amy Winehouse.
Yes.
You know, make sure she's on the right level, on the level to perform. And also, and I might be wrong, some we haven't touched on, Michael Jackson as well.
Yes, of course.
You know, and obviously all the allegations around the doctor and what he was given and stuff. But so sort of we'll talk about him getting ready to perform. But his performing was, it was revolutionary, the word is. You know, it changed. You know, it changed how people performed, and it was a lot about like his movement of the hips and his knees, wasn't it? Yeah, to Elvis the point where he was censored.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
So when he was on television shows in America, because it's the 50s, and they were worried about him corrupting the minds of the youth, they'd only show him from the waist up. But obviously, when Elvis was out live and all the crowd are there, I mean, I'm looking at a photo of him now where they're all like right round him, you know, on the stage. He was able to do what he wanted, and I think that. We've all imitated Elvis at some point, haven't we? Whether it's an or you do a hip shape or whatever. You don't even have to say any who it is. everyone knows, everyone like, knows. Where it yeah. is. And, like, you know, you get things like, you know, how much he's still celebrated. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you think of, like, Tembi, or is it Porthcawl?
Porthcawl, yeah, the Lincoln.
Yeah, the Elvis
yeah.
Fest.
Yeah, yeah, the Elvis Fest.
Literally,
yeah.
thousands of people show up dressed as Elvis and yeah. just celebrate his music all weekend.
Yeah, you went last weekend to an Elvis tribute.
So. Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Goodness, yeah, I did. Oh,
goodness! I went somewhere, there was an Elvis cutout. So I wonder if he is the most impersonated person.
He's got to be one.
He's got to be pretty high.
He's got to be one. Yeah. Because I think, like, yeah, because you just think every shop you go to, it's got like that. There's, well, I can't remember what his suits were called. They were like the diamond encrusted yeah. one, they like suits. Apparently, now today's money, his most expensive one would cost tens of thousands of pounds, right? And it was really heavy.
Yeah.
So obviously, as he got older, he started to suffer with his weight a bit, didn't he? Because he had another, a bit of a bad relationship with food, didn't he? He used to really have a bad diet. And again, like you said, I don't think the lack of sleep helped him, because he'd get up and he'd eat, you know, ridiculous amounts of food at early hours of the morning. But yeah, you see him pouring with sweat in the Vegas show years when you get to see clips of him. But that's because that suit as well was very heavy and hot. Yeah. But I just love the story about, like, when he was, we talk about, like, I suppose you say about, like, people having an impact, changing the course of history and culture and all that, which he did.
Mm.
But I like, we talk about, like, how important individualism is, you know, being yourself, authentic. But just the image of him walking around in Memphis, his friends were saying, his name was Elvis for a start. Mm. He used to put Vaseline through his hair.
Yeah.
Right, to slick it, like, and make it look shiny. And like he said, they were saying, the friends, like, all the blokes wore Levi jeans and a shirt or a t-shirt. And there's Elvis walking down and always had a different style about him, like collar turned up, long sideburns, you know what I mean? Hair done differently. And he's a handsome man. Everyone's commented on that. Like, a lot of people say he's the most, at that time, he's the most beautiful man they'd ever seen, like, in the flesh. And obviously, to be able to have the voice, the singing, and all that to go with it. But I wonder, I think it makes me want to dress up as him.
See,
if you go to Elvis Fest one year, that'd be a laugh.
That would be a laugh.
I want to see you with an Elvis wig on.
Just me with hair would be interesting, wouldn't it?
But yeah, I think as well, like, going through, as well, going to his manager, so, who was known as Colonel Parker and wanted to be known as Colonel Parker as well. He was the one who sort of pushed Elvis, was conscious of his image. I think he instigated Priscilla getting married to him as well, because they were like the perfect couple. Although Priscilla was 14.
I did hear, yeah, yeah.
And I think he's the only one that, she's the only one, sorry, that he married, wasn't it? He had relationships after, but I think...
Yes, he did. Well, funny, so when he was about 13, he forged his parents' marriage certificate to add him and a different girl on. They didn't realise till the 70s. Wow. So it wasn't illegal, but I think, yeah, he was technically like...
Ah.
Yeah. But yeah, she was officially, voice going, officially, yeah.
Well, so anyway, interesting, but like with Colonel Parker, and this is me reading, so this has not been based on fact. What we do know is that he was an illegal immigrant from Holland, and he was the one who stopped Elvis from playing in Europe. So Elvis was known all over the world, obviously, because radio play and all that stuff. And obviously, we think of Beatlemania.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Elvis did it before that, didn't he? I mean, probably Beatles went to another level.
Yeah.
But Elvis was sort of building that in the late 50s. But there was also talk that a killing or a murder had happened in Holland shortly before he left the country. So he entered America illegally, changed his name to Tom Parker, is it, I think is the name?
Yes.
Tom Parker.
Yeah.
And then forged his life from there. And that's why he was adverse to going for Elvis going back to Europe, because I think he had a daunting thing that he'd get arrested.
Yeah.
So have you got something?
Yeah, well, no, it's followed. Yeah, so he was a person of interest in an unsolved murder case. Where a 23-year-old newlywed woman was found beaten to death in the living quarters behind a grocer's store.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
And it happened a few streets from where his family lived. And he'd been hired to make deliveries from this and other grocery stores in the area. So,
wow. And I think, like, that's just an interesting twist on it. Because, again, like, his friends are talking on that last 24 about how Elvis could be very focused.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he was spiraling a little bit at the end of his life, which we'll come on to in a bit, but actually if you said to him, right, we've got a project, because he always wanted to go to Europe apparently, so he'd be like, if you said to him, right, we're going to book a tour in for you, we're going to get you going, we're going to get you in shape, he would get himself in shape and he'd get going. But obviously never had that opportunity. And I think it must be sad for fans from not just Europe, but beyond as well, who didn't have that chance. Because obviously with America, they got the Beatles because the Beatles understood, right, they love us, we need to go there to elevate our career, but also do it for the fans. So, yeah, an interesting little side note. But lots of interesting facts about them. I think one thing we could say about Elvis as well, because you've got to give a balanced view on everything, was he was known to be a bit of a womanizer as well. Like, you know, I think, again, I don't know how people feel about it, but at the end of the day, you know, he's the biggest star in the world everywhere he went. He was surrounded by women. I'm not saying it's right at all. I'm just saying that is what it was. And apparently he did used to handpick people out of, like, crowds to come backstage with him and stuff like that, which when you read about Johnny Cash, I think it was the same, Jerry Lee Lewis, all of them at that time. It's the temptation of fame, isn't it? I suppose. Yeah. So, yeah, any thoughts on that? I was probably throwing that a little bit at you, but is it sign of the times, or should we still recognise it for being wrong? Do you know what I mean?
It's wrong in every sense, I mean, it's, you know? When you look at it, it is wrong, almost looking around saying, right, I'll have you. But like you said, it's not, you know, it is that element of power. What do I do with this power? But also no social media.
Yeah.
So he could do what he wanted.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, obviously, Jerry Lee Lewis and also Johnny Cash. And let's touch on their relationship with, like, Johnny and Elvis.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think, well, Elvis broke through first. The differences, I suppose, between them were Johnny was, he wrote more of his songs. Elvis never wrote a song. But one of Johnny Cash's early, like, things that he would do on stage is take off Elvis. So he would do a banging impression of Elvis. But Elvis was the first one. But obviously there was that crossover period at Sun Records where Sam Phillips, who was the owner of Sun Records, he wanted different music. So he was basically saying, all we hear on the radio is gospel and like that. We need something new. And out of that, Elvis sort of got his rockabilly sound. And Johnny Cash, sort of off the back of that then, probably inspired by it, did the boom chicka boom sound, which was his sound, which we... I think we covered in the Cash one, didn't we? Then when we did that, but also the photo, the $1 million shot or the $1 million quartet, isn't it? Is they're all in Sun Studios one day. Jerry Lee Lewis sat on the piano with Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, and Elvis all leant over having a sing.
Yeah.
Now, why they didn't record? I know. They should have just said, rattle off a few of your favourite numbers.
Yeah.
And recorded that. Rob, we've got the photo, it's amazing, but my mind just strays with what could have been.
Yeah, if they just said, right, guys, you got 2 hours, just have a go and just see what comes out. You know, when it's almost, well, similar like Travelling Wilburys, isn't it?
That's the first thing that came to my mind. And Johnny Cash one was with the Highwaymen, didn't he? He did with Chris Christopherson and that as well, and Willie Nelson and that. But I think that would have been the ultimate.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, Beatles come through after, and they often talked about Little Richard, what's his name? Buddy Holly and Elvis. I think when they landed in America, Ringo is at the front. They'll go, what do you think about people calling you just a bunch of Elvises? And he goes, I don't know what you mean. Oh. And he's like, there's like a shuffle on there. It makes them laugh.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but that was really bad impression.
Man as well. shaking everything.
But I do love some of the facts. I mean, I know you've got some of them as well. But there's one where, you know, you said he was given the badge, obviously, in the narcotics officer. One of his favourite things to do, apparently, was to dress up as a police officer and pull people over. So, giving Elvis a badge was probably a bad idea. He loved to dress up as a police officer and pull people, mainly women, over to give them his autograph. Yeah. That's a bit of a vain thing. I'm going to issue you with a ticket.
Yes.
But imagine, like, people going, oh, God, I've been pulled over.
Yeah.
And Elvis
gets out of it.
I think that's quite a cool thing. He probably hand someone a ticket with his autograph on and say to them, you're welcome. Didn't even ask for it.
Oh, I'm going to try that. I'm just going to pull people up.
Oh, we should go on the car. You know those lights you can just stick on the top, like your old school 70s detectives?
Well, we'll get like some photos of us two done. Sign them. We'll just say, you're welcome.
No, we'd have to pull over very specific people, wouldn't we? You knew about us.
No, I'll pull over the police. Here you are, officer.
Yeah, we've got, obviously, I suppose, as well, the big part of his life was the Vegas years. And, you know, t- to me, like when I look back, I love a lot of Elvis's early stuff. Mind you, we played one of his plays recently. He's got, and he did a lot of good covers, didn't he?
Yeah.
Great,
yeah.
Great voice. I just think with that Vegas at the end of it, it's a bit like how I felt about Britney Spears before she sort of got shut away. Mm. I have a bit of a look at it and go, it's a bit of a sad end, I think.
Yeah.
I think it looks like people who need money are sent there to do these backbreaking residencies. I just think when we're coming towards the end of Elvis, it's just as sad how it all played out for him, isn't it?
And he was due, like, I think the day after his death to start a 12-day tour.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was like two shows a day for some things and stuff like, you know, and he was just worked and worked and worked. You know, I mean, imagine like some bands nowadays being told they have to do that.
I know. They wouldn't be able to cope.
No.
Like, no. Well, it all comes back to some of the people we've spoken about. It ultimately, they display warning signs. Mm. In public, there's warnings.
Yeah.
You said Amy.
And you can see his health, his weight gain, you know, everything there. There's, the sweat. Yeah.
The same year, like, he had prescriptions coming in from 5 doctors. Elvis had performed Aloha from Hawaii in 1970, which was a television broadcast concert. Wasn't the Elvis that opened Vegas in 56. But he's saying, and sometimes he became so concerned about his weight, he would just lay in bed for days without eating. Yeah. Because he was so depressed, but that doesn't always help because you just binge and things like that.
Keith Moon.
Exactly, right? But it's, I suppose he was saying even like, I don't know. I just feel it's quite sad. It's just sad.
And it is. It's that lifestyle, you know, and it all ultimately, you know, and people say, you know, he died on the toilet from a heart attack.
Did.
From that lifestyle, from constipation, from constant straining. Probably all the medical, you know, all everything he was taking, he literally did die straining on the toilet.
Well, he said, didn't he? He left his, he said to his girlfriend or partner at the time, he's just going to, a bit restless, I'm going to go in the toilet. He'd read in there. But, and then obviously she found him on the floor and called for help. But like his friends, they call, like I said, the Memphis Mafia. Mm. One of them is saying on the show, it's quite a good scene. It's 4 friends. They're just in the bar chatting about him.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, we all did. He said, but I told Elvis, you carry on living this way, you're going to die, like basically, and you're not going to make it through. Mm-hmm. And apparently Elvis said to him, I'll watch them put you in the ground before you watch them put me in the ground, which obviously didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to say stuff, isn't it? So I'm not going to say this because I'm pretty sure his friends would have given him warnings. They said he did live reckless. They were saying, like, you know, it was the 50s, 60s, 70s. He's the biggest star in the world. You know, you're going to party. It's like overnight. If I became a rock star, right, I would be the most boring rock star in the world. But, you know, if you were around or people, you know, people would crawl out the woodwork, though, and they people you haven't spoke to for a long time. If they knew you had VIP, you've got access to a world that they never have access to without you. Then I think sometimes you probably do let things slide a bit, don't you, just to live that privileged life. Mm. Live like a star. Through your friend, so they've got almost like the advantage of being removed. You don't hear of like the friends dying around the stars, do you?
No.
Do you know what I mean? They're all alive. Yeah. They tell the stories and they make money off it years later, not being horrible to them.
No,
that's the press coming to them and saying, will you come and do this piece? But I just think that's always we've done Keith Moon, Kurt Cobain, Amy and others.
Yeah,
the friends survive. But look, for me, before I pass to you, I think because my love for rock and roll came through mainly my nan and my bamp over the years, Bill Haley and Elvis, Beatles, all of that. Undeniably, one of the biggest characters of the 20th century, changed the course of like the music we listen to today. And they just released the film Elvis recently, didn't they? And so there's a whole new generation of people finding out about him now. So, yeah, but I think you've got some achievements.
So it's just, covering some of the achievements. Like, you know, we always say, jump into all the links we've put in, you know, there's more there. You know, he is someone, like a lot that we talk about, you know, there's too much.
Yeah,
almost too covered.
Might come back in the future.
And we might come back in the future. So, so he had no less than 149 songs appear on the Hot 100 pop chart in America. 114 of those were in the top 40. 40 in the top 10 and 18 went to number one. Also, he sold over 1 billion. So far, he's over 1 billion records. Starred, this is all off the Graceland website, so I hope it's up to date. Starred in 33 films.
Wow.
His many achievements also were 13 Grammy nominations with 3 wins, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, which he received at 36.
Wow, a lifetime.
And in 1980, he was named one of the 10 outstanding young men of the nation. Not for 1970, sorry.
Wow.
So it's, and there's more achievements. And, you know, a little less conversation with Remix, you know, he'll still break records.
What's the one that came out that was like a mix with Britney Spears the other day?
Oh, with Toxic, wasn't it?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
He'll live on money, man.
He will. And that's Elvis.
Long live the king. Give Bryn the green light to do so.
I know. They're not stopping.
What was
I
the start?
Video. I couldn't go.
We're just watching a video with seagulls.
Seagulls, yeah. Right. I'll turn it down. We'll see if the effect stays just in the background.
It did last week.
It did last week, yeah. Okay, so seagull corner.
Yes.
That's not, yeah, that's you. That's not, or is that you just trying to do Elvis?
So realistic, don't give it away. Wednesday, someone introduced me to a app called ChatGPT, which is basically artificial intelligence. They started off by going, what do you know or do? Like, you know, if you got involved, I was like, no, like, no thing. Anyway, this app is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. So for you, the ones I've tried, we'll find out.
But you could basically put anything, it'll do anything for you.
Yeah.
Right. Now, obviously, there's been a lot around AI. It could even be a future pod about people have used it to try and cheat exams and stuff. So I think people are getting hot on that now. Yeah. They're able to watermark it and stuff and whatever. But in terms of like having fun with it, I've had a lot of fun. So,
okay.
Well, first of all, I told you about it earlier, didn't I?
Yeah.
You joked that you said to me, do my thing for me, well, do my degree
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll just stick it in.
Yeah.
Stick it in AI and let them sort it out. But then I did send you, I said, tell a funny joke about a man called Bryn.
Mm.
And they came back and said, why did Bryn bring a ladder to the party? Because he heard the drinks were on the house. So what's your first one? Well,
my first one is tell a joke about Aaron. Why don't programmers like to go hiking in the Aran Mountains? Because they prefer a keyboard and a mouse, not a rock and boulder.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, in keeping... Go on, okay.
Oh, I my next one I've been told off, so I'll read what it says, but you can go next.
Oh. So, no, you go, because I think I'll close up Seal Call.
I'll do my two and then you
it's
go.
It's apt with today. Okay,
what we've cool. Done. So I got, what rock star would Aran be? As an AI language model, I do not have access to the personal characteristics or preferences of Aran as an individual. Therefore, I cannot accurately determine which rock star Aran would be. It's best to ask Aran themselves about their favourite rock stars, and perhaps they could tell you which one they relate to the most.
You know what little tip I've learned from that? So when you put it in, is like, say, write a poem about Aran.
Mm.
Aran likes... playing guitar, beer, whatever, and it takes that into account then when you're doing it.
So. And then my other one I got told off for. So, I mean, I always think it's funny just thinking, like, what would your porn star name be? So I put Give Aran a Porn Star Name, and I've got, I'm sorry, but I cannot fulfill that request as it goes against ethical moral principles. As an AI language model, my purpose is to provide informative and helpful responses while upholding respect and professionalism. Let's maintain a positive and respectful conversation. So,
hear, hear. So I asked it to write a song in the style of Elvis about a man called Bryn. Verse one.
Hey, you know what? We could do the Rusty Shackle Challenge.
Now we will, though. Right, verse one. Well, there's a man in town, goes by the name of Bryn. He's got a heart of gold and a devilish grin. All the ladies swoon when he walks on by.
Oh, yeah.
With those hips that don't lie and that twinkle in his eye. Bryn, oh Bryn, you're the king of the scene. With that voice that can croon and those blue suede shoes so clean. You light up the room with your rocking and rolling. Bryn, oh Bryn, you've got our hearts a-strolling.
Oh, yeah.
Verse two. He's got a style all his own and a voice like honey. He'll make you laugh and sing and forget about your money. He's the life of the party. He's the cat's meow. And when he hits that stage, he's going to wow you right now. Then it's the chorus again. Bridge. He's got a swagger in his step and a spark in his soul. He's the one and only Bryn, and you'll never find another to hold. He'll make you swing and sway and leave all your troubles behind. Bryn, oh Bryn, you're the one of a kind. Bryn, oh Bryn, you're the king of the scene with a voice that can croon and the boots that you so clean. You light up the room with your rocking and rolling. Bryn, oh Bryn, you've got a heart to stroll in. And then there's an outro.
Oh, lovely.
So let's all give a cheer for the man of the night.
Woo!
The one and only Bryn, he's going to shine so bright. With his hips a swaying and his voice a ringing, Bryn, oh Bryn, you've got a heart to singing.
I'm sorry, since you did it for me, write an Elvis style song about Aaron Cook.
It probably got the same.
I'm not sure. There's a new kid in town, he's all fired up, with his charms he's sure to fill your cup. He's got a heart of gold or he's on his grind. Aaron Cook is the man you need to find. Chorus. He's the king of the kitchen, the prince of the stove. With his spatula in hand, he'll never lose groove. Aaron Cook, he's the real deal. When it comes to cooking, he's got the appeal. He's got a secret spice that'll make you sing. With his culinary skills, he's the real king. He's got a magic touch, he can cook up a feast. Aaron Cook is the one, he's the culinary beast. He's the king of the kitchen, the prince of the stove. With his spatula in hand, he'll never lose his groove. Aaron Cook, he's the real deal. When it comes to cooking, he's got the appeal. Bridge. He'll fry it, he'll bake it, he'll grill it, he'll shake it. Aaron Cook, he'll never disappoint. With his signature dish, you'll never regret a single point. Chorus. He's the king of the kitchen, the prince of the stove. With his spatula in hand, he'll never lose his groove. Aaron Cook, he's the real deal when it comes to cooking. He's got the appeal. Outro. Well, there you have it, folks. Aaron Cook. Gonna make you feel like a true foodie crook. So get your aprons on, let's get a cooking. With Aaron Cook, you'll never go looking.
On our next voyage.
I'm still laughing.
I know.
My secret spice. I'm going to be the next Levi Roots, mate. I'm going to make my own spicy sauce.
Right.
I should have put your surname in. No, never mind.
Right, challenge time. I think we're going to do this together, aren't we?
Yes.
Some bits we are, some bits we aren't. It's coming up to the anniversary of kind of our breakthrough, like big breakthrough.
So
we're going to go to things.
Yes, we're going to talk a little bit more about in the outro, but I think for us, obviously we do this pod in our own time.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose challenge to everyone else is from the Newport and Cardiff areas is to listen to the outro.
Yes.
In a moment and get along come and see us.
Yeah. Outro time. So I think we're doing a bit of a plug for some things that are coming up, but also apparently we're going on tour according to Instagram.
Yes, we
to
are.
To cover the 10, there's only 10 states we've got to get to. So please, yeah, have a gander. I think I only put 9 up for some reason.
I know, but there are 10.
Always organised.
Yeah.
So help us conquer America.
Yes.
We can.
Otherwise we'll have to go.
Otherwise we have to go, and people have voted that we've got to take our wives.
Well, they can do 5 and we'll do 5.
No, we're doing all 10.
Yeah.
They can do 1.
We'll just dump them off in New York or Florida or somewhere.
Yeah, they'll be happy. Yeah.
And also you've got a nice lineup in front of you, haven't you?
I have. Watch how you say that. Yeah, so the big session is back.
Yes, it is.
It's back. It's the 7th, 8th and 9th of April at the Westgate Hotel.
Yep.
Pretty sure it's free.
It is free.
Free entry all weekend. So obviously this podcast has come out at a different day because we wanted to plug it.
Yes.
So if you're in the Newport, Cardiff, South Wales, United Kingdom, World Europe area, get along. We'll be at some of it.
We will.
Soon come and say hello. Yep. As well, on the Friday, you've got the likes of Otto, Joe Kelly and Royal Pharmacy, Small Miracles, Dance People, Brian Isia, Ellis Thomas. Saturday and Sunday, I'll say the headliners in a bit. I've got to go through Mojo Juniors there, Burning Fears, Mahouts, a band called Sudoku, Finding Aurora, Eureka's, The Terrapins, Tabersa, Ophelia's Beard, Katie Lou, Aronson are going to be there.
Oh, you're excited for that one.
I am excited for that one, yeah. Simple As are going to be there. Tom Crow and the Ghost Riders are there. Headlining the Sunday are they? I think it's the Broomies, I think is how you say it. You know, if you search The Big Sesh, if you have a look, then they'll, you know, you'll find it on Instagram. But headline on the Saturday, and I think it was yourself that told this person about this and to get in touch, is one of our guests.
Key Govard. We're super proud of him, aren't we?
That's cracking. Yeah.
I just remember...
He better be good, mind, because we've never heard him. No pressure.
Well, when the artist application came out, I sent it to him and he went, I'm going to do it now. And also, you have the back of that Sudoku as well. Yep. Obviously, are going to be playing there. They had two stages last year. They've got three this year.
Oh, yes.
They're having a downstairs the bar, and then the ballroom. So, your key getting to play in the ballroom.
Crass.
Mate, take a photographer, man. You've got your fresh shots there, like, everything sorted. And then on the Sunday night, so we've got, you know, we've got to do a bit of time travelling, haven't we?
We've got
to try and do a bit of time travelling. We had a nice voice note off Ellis, didn't we, the other week? Mm-hmm. How many F words did he say? How many F bombs did he drop? You said to me, 11.
Yeah. And maybe it was him that your dad was telling off.
Well, with him and me combined, there was a lot.
Yeah, it was a few.
Anyway, it starts at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Tickets are a tenner, and you get to see Micromanager, who's DJing, got Slate, Thinking with Sand, Bad Shout, X Agent, Foot Foot, Fig, Nookie, Spithood, Dactyl Terror, love that name, that's a good like one, and Schlug.
Bang.
So, Bank Holiday Sunday the 9th, and it's going to be a late one.
Yeah.
Schlug are playing late, hence the Midnight Mass name. And again, we're just super proud of them.
We are.
We?
Yeah. You know. It's great seeing how well everyone's doing.
Yeah.
Like, just seeing people touring, you know, Blue Amber are popping up places. You know, Mr. Bewley, it seems like the tour went really well. And Six Music. Is it Six Music?
Radio Wells with Hugh
Radio
Stevens.
Radio Wells, sorry, Hugh Stevens promoting. Yeah. Pigeon Detect. Pigeon Wigs.
Pigeon Detectives. That's a different band.
That's a different band.
If you want to come on, you come on.
Yeah, yeah, please come on. But yeah, just seeing how well they're doing. Yeah, you know, well done, guys.
We did post, though, didn't we, with Mr. Bewley. A bit of a kudos to us. We got in, we got in with Mr. Bewley, head of Hugh Stevens.
Did. We did. Have that.
Have that, Hugh. Joe, we love you, Hugh. Hugh does loads. I won't be surprised if he pops up with a couple of these things.
Yeah.
And I think as well, Drew from Blue Amber is going to get on stage with Schlug at Midnight Mass.
Wow,
again,
awesome.
Because he's done that before, hasn't he? Played a bit of saxophone. So, just super proud of everyone. I'm sure we'll meet new people.
We will.
Over this one.
Please
so
come say hello.
Please come say hello. And we're going to pin Joe down, aren't we, at some point this year. Whether it's one of us or both. And just get him to say a few words. Because he does a lot of work, but he's hard to pin down,
he
isn't
is.
He, old Joe?
He
and
is.
He knows
so
it.
So, we're coming for you.
And Gav, free beer. Yep, cheers. Thank you very
nice
much.
Nice one. Ta-ra.
It's a ta-ra for me.
Ta-ra from him.